Well, hello everyone. This is welcome to Superfast Buzz Punisher with James, Dean, and Peter. It's quite an absurd name, actually, but I'm going to not take responsibility for that.
You say absurd, but I think behind the word you meant phenomenal.
I think it's clearly obvious where this name was contrived.
How dare you?
What we have here is we have a collection of three people. James is me, and we have Dean, and we have Peter. And the three of us have products in the vein of Superfast. That's my product line, and Dean has a buzz type marketing bent.
And Peter's into bondage.
Yeah, he has an affiliate Punisher product. So that's pretty I think we'll abbreviate that now to SFBP. So that's what SFBP is. It's a culmination of three different internet marketing people coming together, I suppose. We've been hanging out for the last few days, and we thought it'd be a good idea to discuss some of the common things, I suppose, that we may all have a different viewpoint, but as a collective, we're starting actually to share ideas with each other, and it helps us move forward a little bit quicker in the areas that we weren't aware of.
It's almost like a marketing cocktail. The ingredients on their own, you know, mine is quite a little bit sour. It leaves a weird taste in your mouth. But when you mix it all together, it's great, and then you go a little lightheaded and end up in a bar fight. So that's kind of what we're trying to do here. It's the perfect cocktail, a little smorgasbord, a buffet, if you will, of business and success advice.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah. What do you got to say, Peter?
I think it's a great eclectic collection of three internet marketers that have started off on three different paths, and now we're like really merging on the same path. And what it really boils down to is, what does success mean to you? What success means to us? And we're going to share with you how we've really all come together on the same path, basically.
Yeah, and that's one of the big misconceptions, is there's no exact path that everyone has to take. Everyone can get to the same destination via a different path. We all have different ways of thinking and different outlooks on life. And I think we're going to try and share our own individual ones and hopefully get to the same destination.
Well, I guess if we pick some common topics, then we could see what our angles are on them.
I kind of wish, I know it's a bit late now, but I almost wish we had some slides that would set up these common topics of which we could then discuss in more detail.
That would be highly organized.
That would be phenomenal.
So that'd be up to someone like me to do that, wouldn't it?
It would be, yeah.
So,
Whey!
There you go. So, I guess in the topic of mistakes, we should discuss perhaps, you know, as you said, we've come to this from different paths. So I wonder if, you know, maybe there's three different paths with different mistakes on them that we could help people eliminate.
So are we talking about maybe the biggest mistakes that we've made so far, or the big mistakes that we see people making? Should we do some confession? Get a confession out of the way early.
Yeah, we could start with your wardrobe choice or...
Yeah, we've not got all afternoon, unfortunately. But yeah, so the biggest mistake I think I've made is perfectionism and trying to get things perfect before releasing them. And, you know, the whole get it out there thing is some of the best advice that I've been lucky enough to receive. And it was a friend of mine, a guy called Perry Lawrence from New York, actually came down and he said, look, Dean, good enough is good enough. So whenever you're creating videos or products or blog posts or articles or campaigns, you know, it's better to have it 90% how you want it and get it out there than have it perfect and just sitting in your bedroom or your basement or something like that. So the amount of products and projects that I've got that are like 80-90% finished and have never seen the light of day is frightening. So that's definitely the big mistake I've made. That's held me back a little in the past. And like you say, my wardrobe is probably up there as well. James, you definitely haven't made any mistakes. Are you were Mr. Competitive.
No, I've made plenty of mistakes. In fact, I'm probably, I mean, in contrast to what your mistake was, I do release products well before they're perfect.
That's your mistake, is it?
I'm a poster boy for getting out products that are, you know, incomplete. But, you know, half a product's better than no product in the marketplace. Yeah. And I was lucky enough in my business career to have a mentor who put me onto General Patton, who pretty much had that philosophy that a good plan today is better than a great plan tomorrow. Yeah. And he was an implementer. I mean, he carved himself across the whole continent before Rommel did. You know, he just plowed across in like a day. So that wasn't my mistake. In the thing that I was focusing too much on in the beginning was I was trying to do everything for free.
Mm.
And there's this mindset out there in marketing that everything has to be free and that you don't have to spend any money, which, I mean, it's a serious business here. As soon as I started investing in good information and the right tools, my results catapulted. And you'll never be able to outsource until you cross that hurdle of, I want to pay someone else. So people hold back and they think, well, I could just do it myself. I'll save the money. You're not saving money. You're costing yourself a fortune in opportunity, in potential profits, because you're hoarding stuff. And we are limited by capacity. The thing that stops us making money is capacity and management of our capacity. So as soon as you can multiply yourself, and I think we should probably address leverage at some point in this call.
Yeah,
perhaps in a few slides down the track. but it really was. I went probably for 9 months or so until I bought my first ebook, and I reluctantly forked out the $20 or $30.
Was that my ebook?
It wasn't your ebook.
I'm going to take full credit for your success.
It wasn't your ebook, you know, as soon as I read that, I could have saved myself all that time. So time equals life, and if you want to increase your life, you've got to somehow multiply your time. And to do that sometimes it's a little investment in the right area can get you a tremendous result.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
Peter, what was your biggest mistake?
I think I made two big mistakes. One was trying to do everything myself, which is what every small business owner getting online actually does. They try to do everything themselves. And the second mistake I made was not getting the leadership, not getting the mentor right away. If I had to do it all over again, and we'll get into that down the road, but the two biggest mistakes was working 16-20 hour days doing everything myself. That was building the web page, building the blogs, writing the email copy, doing the research. You only have a certain amount of hours in a day to do stuff, and it really forced me, after about 2 years of doing everything by myself, I was really burnt out. I mean, I'm sure there's some of you out there that fell asleep at 6 o'clock in the morning by your laptop, drool hanging down the side of your side of your mouth, wondering what's the next breakthrough? How am I really going to make money online? And the second big mistake was just not having that mentor or that leadership, knowing who to follow, because in the internet marketing community, everyone is the greatest thing since sliced bread. Everyone is the guru. So there was so much noise in my inbox the first 2 years of actually doing this, I couldn't figure out who to follow. So what I actually did was I followed everybody, I bought everything in the marketplace, and I got no further ahead. I was actually 10 steps behind. So that was my two biggest mistakes that I don't want anybody to go through. So as you're listening to this right now, definitely learn from myself, learn from Dean, and learn from James. Learn from our mistakes, because our mistakes will turn you and put you into the profit zone.
Yeah, I had the same thing, actually. I was trying to do everything myself. If I didn't do it, it didn't get done. And, that's pretty much a description of a job, in my opinion. And I think once you start to outsource and leverage, like we'll discuss in a moment, then it goes from a job to a business. And I think that's the key.
Yeah, I also did everything myself. And it just slows your rate of growth. As soon as you can multiply or leverage, so... And it sort of came later on too, where I discovered that I could actually have other people do it, and there's gifted people out there really good at building websites and doing SEO and design and stuff, which I really wasn't good at design, for example, but I would still install a e-cover script and try and make... it came down to not investing. I wasn't investing like a business. It's ridiculous. It's like a restaurant owner trying to make his own chairs and tables and tablecloths for his restaurant. You wouldn't even dream of it in a normal business. So why would we do it online?
Do you want to mention some of the things that you outsource?
Yes, I outsource everything from having my lawns mowed, the pool cleaned, the driver. We even have people deliver boxes of fruit. So it's the non-business things are one of the first things you want to have a look at, if possible, because then you're free to think about your marketing. When it comes to the marketing, I outsource content creation, content distribution, website building, traffic, design, logos, research, report, transcriptions. There's hardly anything you can't get someone to do. Programming, the more you do it, the better relationships you build up with these people. And then what I've found is that other people want these things too, and I've been able to leverage up. So we'll probably cover that in the leverage section. But also, I want to echo what Peter said. I was a professional consumer of emails. The way I look at it now, one of the huge mistakes was I spent all my time researching and learning and trying to understand everything before I implemented anything. You're either the one reading the emails or sending them. And one day it hit me like a thunderbolt. I'm like, hang on, I'm reading all these emails, but they're sending them all and I'm buying their stuff. I want to be the one sending the email, not reading it. So you can only do one or the other. You either, if you want to see an example of that in nature, it's like a farmer. He can either plant the seeds or harvest the seeds, but you can't do both at the same time.
Nice.
So, you know, you got to decide which fence you're on. So I switched across to, okay, I want to be the one that's sending the information, the one that's leading the market, the one that's training the other people, and they can learn from me. And as soon as you assume that position, it gives you the, you actually required then to know what you're talking about and to hone in on a few certain areas to be an expert at it.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for kind of learning something by doing it as well. I was in the same boat of reading all these emails and trying to master everything and plan it all out and get it all prepared before I took any action. And, you know, I always say that mistakes are just a fancy word for experience. So, you know, it's the fastest way. I discovered that from learning a language, learning Spanish. I really started to master the language when I accidentally announced to my girlfriend's family that I was pregnant. We'd had a very large meal, and I think I wanted to say something about my stomach being full, and I accidentally announced I was pregnant, and I wanted the world to swallow me up. But I can guarantee I never made that mistake again. I wear verbal protection now. So stay safe, kids. But okay. Should we move on to from worst to best?
Yeah, why not?
Well, look at that. You're a fast typer, James.
Yeah, it's like magic.
Do you want to start off, Pete?
Yeah, one of the best advices, piece of advice that I can give people listening today is when it comes to outsourcing, one of the scariest things for me was that first outsourcing event. And it didn't actually come online. It came actually offline because when my mentor taught me, it was about doing the things that you don't want to be doing, such as your laundry, such as cleaning the house, such as going out for groceries. This is the kind of stuff that you need to get outsourced because this puts you in a mindset that you have to generate income now to be able to take those services on. So for me, it also freed me up to start to get into my marketing. Okay, now I'm paying somebody $10, $12 an hour to actually do my laundry for me, or I'm actually getting my laundry outsourced to go to the dry cleaners. So now I've got to figure out exactly how am I gonna make $12 an hour or $24 an hour, because I have to make some money for myself. So that was one of the biggest fears, and it was the most liberating of concepts for me was for doing the outsourcing. So the biggest piece of advice that I can give, it's not so much being scared, it's about being liberated. It's about knowing your path and knowing that if you're serious about building an actual business online, then you have to get serious about the rest of your life, the rest of your stuff that you're doing not online, so that you can prepare yourself for your online journey.
Yeah, I mean, it still amazes me. I'm with you. I have a team of cleaners. I only have an apartment, two-bedroom apartment at the moment, and I have a team of cleaners that come in. And the amount of friends and associates that I have that are just blown away that I have this, And they're like, you know, that's crazy. It's such a wasted expense. And they don't blink twice at the fact that I've got a 50-inch TV or anything like that. You know, exactly. That's acceptable. But the fact that I'm spending $12 an hour to liberate my time and work on my business is somehow shocking to them. So,
but as an entrepreneur, though, it's good because it's not an actual expense. It's an investment.
As an entrepreneur, it's common sense to me. I mean, why would you do anything else? But I think that's definitely a mindset shift between those who are doing it and those who aren't. And I think people have to cross over and get into that mindset, mm-hmm. which leads into the best advice that I've ever been given is that Dean, you have to value your own time before anyone else will.
Exactly.
And this was a huge mistake, and I see so many people doing this, and I know we've got friends that are still struggling with this. Is you have to value your own time, and I struggled with it initially, and I think there's a few reasons for that. One is that if you've learned a skill or you've learned some knowledge and it comes easy to you and you're tapping into your talents and things that you do naturally, you don't necessarily assign the value because it comes easy to you. You already know it. But you've got to, it's like the story. Are you guys familiar with the air conditioning hotel story?
No.
Well, basically there's a hotel owner, and it's the middle of summer and the air conditioning unit breaks. And so he tries to fix it, doesn't work. So he finally gives in, calls an expert. The expert comes down, takes the panel off the air conditioning unit, twists one screw, gives it a little bang, and it starts working again. So the hotel owner's just blown away. He's like, oh, that's fantastic. You've saved me. How much do I owe you? And he said, oh, it's $700. And he goes crazy. He said, $700? You've just come down, you've taken off the panel, you've turned one screw, and you're charging me $700. How do you justify that? And the expert says, well, it's $50 to come down, and it's $750 for knowing which screw had to be turned. And that's kind of the thing. It's not necessarily what you do, it's how you got that skill in the first place. It's the, we have advice that, it might take us 2 minutes to teach someone, but it took us 20 years or 15 years to master that, and a lot of money and a lot of mistakes along the way. So that's definitely the best advice I've been given. You have to value your time, or else you're doing yourself a huge disservice.
It's not dissimilar to the Brian Tracy example of the dentist pulling a tooth. That he has this guy in the chair and he pulls the tooth out. It takes like 10 seconds. Mm. He gets a $150 bill. And he said, well, I can take it out slower if you want.
I'm using that one next time.
he had to go through university and train for that and understand anesthetics and all that stuff to be able to just yank that tooth out. Now, we do see that a lot, don't we? People undervaluing their services all the time. I've got some advice too. That is, from working with different people and observing my own input and results, I'd say that people tend to limit themselves mentally for no reason whatsoever. I certainly did. I know that I worked in my job at least a year longer than I should have, and it really only came through an outside sort of incident when I was dealing with a bureaucratic multinational corporation, and they were frustrating me. I ended up creating a report internally to them for this master organization that I was working for to explain to them why their websites were ineffective and how they were leaving themselves behind and causing us to be ineffective. And then one day, and it was just after I got back from an underground conference, my mind had just been exploded with possibility. I grabbed the same report, and then I contacted two clients that I'd built websites for, and I repurposed that as a proposal, and I said, I can help you with your online marketing. And I sent that off, and they both signed up straight away for recurring $6,000 a month. And I could have done that at any time. I had these clients on my books for more than a year. So it was the realization, and I would equate this to the Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz. You can click your heels anytime you want. Mm. Anytime you really want to bust out and do it, you can. The only person holding you back is you.
The Exactly.
Well, a lot of people, and this is a pattern, and I'm speaking from experience here, but a lot of people need some sort of trauma or some negative thing to happen in their life. I call it a pivotal moment before they kind of, you know, enough is enough. This is kind of the final nail in the coffin, and I'm going to go and do it. And they look back a couple of years later and they think what seemed like a bad thing at the time is actually the best thing that ever happened. And I actually did it. I was with my girlfriend about 6 years ago. We were flat broke. We hated our careers. She would often come back, in tears from the job. We had no idea what we were doing. And we got kicked out of our apartment. And the landlord basically decided to cash in and make a ton of cash on the place. And we had like 48 hours to move out and get a new place, which is hard enough in itself. It's even harder when you've got like £3.50 to your name. £3.60, I would have been fine, but £3.50 is pushing it a little bit. So we did what any young couple would do that was flat broke and miserable. We panicked. And then after that, we said, we need to get our heads together. And we eventually ended up moving to Madrid. And I was in a room and I had a laptop and an internet connection. And I didn't want to leave the room because I didn't speak Spanish. so basically, that forced me to do something drastic. And I said, I've got to find out how to make money on this internet, because there's only so many video games and German porn you can watch, even in your early 20s. So, it took that for me to really, knuckle down and master that and take action and be brave enough to go through with it. If it hadn't been for that, then I would probably have been stuck in the rat race even now, which is a horrible, horrible thought. So that's... that's definitely something. If you've not had that experience yet, like James said, just click your heels, get it done.
Well, I remember listening to a Bob Proctor recording about Born Rich or something like that. He was talking about elephants when they're babies in the circus. They put them on a stick in the ground with a rope, and they try tugging against it, but they can't move the stick. And then they grow up as fully grown adult elephants. And all they need to do to hold these elephants is to just drive a little stick in the ground with a string. And they because they tried when they were a kid, and they couldn't pull away from the stick, they don't even try anymore. But any time they could just yank it out if they wanted to. Mm-hmm. So I think working on mindset is a really good place to start, and challenge yourself there. And the other thing to bear in mind is that quite often the thing that is scaring you the most is exactly what you need to do.
Oh, I would totally agree with that, actually. I was going to save that for the next imaginary slide that we don't have prepared in any way, shape, or form. But I'm a big believer in that. I always say money is where the fear's at. And I don't know if that's kind of we won't get into the fear of success or anything like that. But I'm a big believer. That's why I got into public speaking. I knew it was the next big hurdle for me. And it was definitely an area of intense fear for me. And I did the usual thing. I made the excuses and told the world that I didn't need to be doing this, and tried to justify it to myself. And then I eventually did it, and things have completely changed since then. So money is definitely where the fear's at. The things that scare you the most are probably the things you need to be doing right now.
Well, I found that jumping out of an aeroplane a couple of times, skydiving, was good for setting my bar, so that if you were, say in my case, I was asked to speak publicly, but I think, well, gosh, I've jumped out of an aeroplane. This isn't so bad in comparison. So once you set the bar high, everything else becomes easier to accept. And if you can do something once, it's really easy to do it again, because, it's like the 4-minute mile thing, it's established, it's proven, you've done it. You wouldn't even think twice about it the second, third, fourth time about it.
It's just forced repetition. That's all it is.
I had the same experience. It was I worded it as a comfort zone thing. I believe that the comfort zone is the most dangerous place you can be as an entrepreneur, as a human in general. So I did the same thing. I did the public speaking and things like that. I pushed myself, and it almost seemed like everything else in life suddenly became that little bit easier, because I kind of expanded and pushed my comfort zone. And the stuff that kind of slightly scared me no longer scared me. So I don't know if you've experience that, Pete. Maybe on the beach.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. Have you got a little confession to make there, Pete?
Yes, I actually
about
I
your
do.
Your manhood.
I'm now considered a little girl. I was a man before, now I'm a little girl. And that's an exciting story that we'll get into later on.
Yeah. Maybe a story for another time.
Fear of the unknown.
Yeah. I think for me, a job was my comfort zone. I had a great job. It was really high paid. It was prestigious. It was close to home, and I was managing it Monday to Friday. And it wasn't right. I didn't feel edgy enough. I didn't feel like I was pushing the extreme to where I could. I felt I was a sellout to myself, especially when I was hanging out with marketers who were making up to around $100,000 per day. They pushed my perception. So that just highlighted how comfortable I'd put myself into that position. It's a massive comfort zone compared to what I believed I was capable of. And the result is that I've since had several $100,000 days.
High five.
Yeah. Double high five. That's not an edit timeline there.
Yeah, exactly.
Note to self.
Yeah.
So it is absolutely mind-blowing when you push yourself out of a comfort zone. That's when you start living. I actually really felt like I was deferring life. Mm. I was always thinking about things as one day, you know, one day I'll be able to sleep in instead of go to work. One day I'll be able to live near the beach. One day I can spend more time with my family. You know, that was some point in my future, but not right now. And I really felt like there was something wrong with that.
And often the reality is that one day or later is just a fancy way of saying never.
Yes,
exactly.
Never.
I was a bit scared that that would be the case. And when you're sidled with mortgage payments and you have a boss wanting you to, you know, just having the same discussions, you know, where are you up to with this and why are these results like that? And it's at some point you just want to say, you know, rude words.
We need a beep machine.
It's really, you know, I think, I guess my best advice in summary is if you have the mental mindset for being an entrepreneur and taking your destiny into your own hands, just don't delay. Just get onto it ASAP. Because once you're an entrepreneur, the world opens up. When you can wake up and say, well, what do I want to do today? And you can make fun out of it. If you want to stay at the coffee shop for a second coffee, you can.
I wouldn't know anything about that, James. I think the irony is, James, and I'm sure you've experienced this, the irony is once you've left that corporate kind of rat race and you look back, it was actually fake security, because, and especially in today's climate, I think it's becoming more obvious than ever. And like you say, people struggle with the mindset because they have this fake security of this income. But I mean, what happens if your boss gets hit by a bus tomorrow?
Exactly. There is no security in having a job. There's none at all.
It's fake security.
Should we move on?
Yeah, are we time capsule. Now we're talking. I'll let James start on this one.
No, I think you should, Dino. Explain what this time capsule means, because it's one of your clever Deanisms here.
It's a little Deanism coming at you, straight into your ears. Basically, the thing we want to cover here is if you could get in a time capsule or a time machine, go back in time to when you were just getting started into the online business or the entrepreneurial world, and you had 30 seconds to a minute to talk to yourself, what advice would you give yourself? What is the one thing that you would want to convey to yourself, knowing what you know now? So I'll fire that question in your direction, Pete.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot. The time capsule for me, short, sweet, and quick in 30 seconds, would be to cut out all the email noise, find a mentor, someone that's been there, done that, that's doing it, look over their shoulder, and stick with them for a year. After you're done that, you're good to go off on your own, because within that year time frame, if you're with an absolute sharp online mentor, you're going to be able to create a six-figure income within literally 90 days after that point, if not sooner than that. So that would be my time capsule to myself.
You got a little time capsule nugget for us, Jimbo?
Yeah, I was going to say that if I was able to go back and speak to myself, I'd just say, believe in yourself. You can absolutely do it, and don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Because I held off releasing my first product, wondering if when I put it out that I'd get slammed down and told off, and people, you know, I was basically worried about what other people thought, and I needn't have been.
Yeah.
And now I realize that I'm in absolute control of what it is that I do, and I don't really care what other people think, because if you don't want to be criticized, then you should do nothing, say nothing, and be nothing.
Yeah,
exactly. Stay under the rock.
As soon as you start putting stuff out there, you will create a little bit of activity. It's almost always positive in my case, thankfully, but I was a little bit worried, I was bracing myself for any negative feedback. And now I recognize that feedback's just a little sign on how you can improve things and create even better products. And it snowballs in, the customers. I mean, I'm fortunate that I have absolutely the best clients in the world. I mean, they demand products from me. They know what I have. They love what I put out. And they actually tell me what else they want. And they support me through each product and guide me as to, how I can help them the most. So it's turned out to be the most incredible thing. So if I went back, I'd say people are going to really like what you produce. Start doing it earlier. Invest in yourself. Find the right information. You're absolutely spot on, Peter, there. Like, filter out the noise. Mm. It's really only fairly recently that I've discovered a hack to be able to eliminate like 98% of the crap that's coming through the inbox. And I sort of stumbled across it through a progression of refinements, and it's been forced because I've managed to build up, I went right through that 3-figure, 4-figure, 5-figure, 6-figure, now 7-figure a year in gross sales and into the business, and I'm shooting for 8 figures without any staff or without driving off in my car to an office. So I have to be absolutely disciplined with how I invest my time. And email is the biggest time suck on the planet for new internet marketers and seasoned ones. I think because the more established they get, that the more information they think that they're going to need to take in to stay on top of the game and to observe what's happening in the market. But there are ways to refine that, and I think I've finally discovered it. Where I can actually go to sleep at night, wake up in the morning, and there might be a dozen emails that I need to look at, and the rest of it's optional. And I think that's well worth putting time and energy into in the beginning to get that system set up.
Otherwise, it can become a bit of an addiction, I've seen. I think that's a common pattern. It's just people get addicted, especially with iPhones. I think iPhone is the best and worst thing that's happened in our industry. It's the amount of people that just every 10 minutes just getting their fix, hitting the refresh button on Gmail and things like that. It's a dangerous thing, and I speak from experience as well. And James shared with me his strategy as well on email filtering, shall we call it. And it's kind of... It's interesting. It kind of takes a huge weight off your shoulders on a day-to-day basis that you didn't even realize was weighing you down in the first place. So, I definitely back that. The thing I would tell myself would definitely be careful with opportunity. When I started off, I kind of considered myself an opportunity finder. I'm very good at locating opportunities and tapping into them and working those deals. But the problem is you can quickly end up just creating opportunity after opportunity and not necessarily finishing anything and definitely spreading yourself too thin. I was just of the mindset that let's get 100 opportunities in, and if 2 of them work, I'll be fine. But the reality is if you're trying to do 100 opportunities, none of them are going to work. So that would be one thing I would tell myself. I echo Pete's comments about find a mentor. I think you have to be pretty aggressive with that. If someone's not willing to take you under their wing, then just force your way under the wing. I'm a strong believer in that. Pete, have you got any tips on how people can find a mentor or how to engage with them? Is it a case of you've got to pay to play?
Yeah, there's a couple different ways that you can actually find a mentor. You have to think about this first and foremost. What type of value are you going to provide to somebody else? It's not the fact that you want to chase down top online gurus. You have to figure out what are they looking for. They're already a guru, so now what's the next biggest challenge for them? The next biggest challenge for a lot of gurus is to find somebody that they can actually take under their wing and start to hone and teach them their skill sets. And a lot of people don't understand this. I see marketers every day emailing me personally, and they always go about it the wrong way. They always go about it as, oh my God, I'm broke, I'm desperate, I'm going to lose my house within 48 hours. Show me a quick way to make money online. Well, that's not the way to approach somebody. That's not the way I approached my first mentor, which was Yuan Chi. I didn't approach him like that. I approached him as as a high value prospect.
Desperation is such an unappealing.
It's such a turnoff.
Such a turnoff, isn't it? It's just a big point there. Like, you never ever want to be desperate. Even if you are desperate, mm-hmm. you're not desperate.
You don't want to even show it up if you're desperate.
It's not an attractive trait.
Well, speaking of attractive trait, I mean, it's like the best way of describing it is almost the dating world. You know, you don't want to be going into a bar and saying, oh, please, I'm so lonely. Hold me. Tell me everything's going to be okay. Show me some love. You know, even if you are feeling that, you want to portray high value. And that's what appeals. You know, you wouldn't get, let's say, a Brad Pitt walking into a bar saying, oh, please, will you talk to me? You know, he just plays it cool and everyone flocks.
Well, here's what the trap with desperation is, that it's all about you and you're not even considering the other person's situation.
Exactly.
It's a very selfish scenario to be in. So whenever someone's approaching you with, I need this, I need that, you know, what can you do for me? That's the guru's not going to respond to that at all.
Yeah, I always just go with the win-win system for finding opportunities or anything like that. Yeah, I would even start with what's in it for the other person.
Exactly.
But if you can find a win-win, I mean, it becomes quite an easy sell. If everyone's going to be happy with the arrangement, you don't necessarily have to sell it. Whereas if you're going in desperate, you're not proposing anything, are you? You're just kind of begging, and it is a huge turnoff. So definitely focus on what's in it for the other person, find the win-win, and hang out with Brad Pitt if you want to you want to pick up some women. Can't beat that advice. James said something earlier about being worried about people's responses and negativity and negative feedback. I have a mantra in my marketing, in my business in general. I always say that the worst response you can get is no response at all. So, you know, I early on would get very worried and very paranoid over people saying things that might be deemed negative. And now it almost just gives me that little kick. I know I'm on the right track if I get maybe 10 complaints and 100 positive results. But back in the day, I would definitely have focused on the negativity too much. So, you know, the worst response you can get is no response at all.
I had a similar thing when one of my popular products was stolen and ripped off and file shared in one of those black hat type forums. But I sort of got a quiet chuckle when they were giving it big compliments.
Yeah.
So, yes, they stole it, but they were saying, this is really cool shit. You know, finally something that works and it's really good. So it was like a double-edged sword there, but I guess as soon as you start getting imitated and ripped off and cloned, that's another sign that you're starting to produce something useful.
Exactly.
Like, imitation is the biggest form of flattery.
I had a similar experience as well when I'd actually approached two other high-profile internet marketers that actually took my product, said that they'd helped me out. Then they turned around, respun my product, and now it's on the internet in three different product forms. I actually had one of my other products downloaded over 600,000 times throughout the BitTorrent site. So that's when you know you're on the right track, when people are taking your stuff and giving you massive distribution for free.
Exactly.
That's a great form of traffic.
So always put affiliate links in your information products.
There we go.
Absolutely.
I think we might have just discovered a strategy there. I think I'm going to go to all the torrent sites later on and put all my ebooks on there.
It's absolutely phenomenal.
A lot of people do that.
I've heard they do.
It's actually a legitimate distribution channel for it's like with ClickBank products, it's yeah. 1 second. You should always charge a little more than what you expect if you have a ClickBank product, knowing that you're going to be ripped off.
That's a good point. The final thing I'd say on the time capsule, and I know I limited it to 30 seconds in the time capsule, but I'm a very fast talker, so I'm going to squeeze this in. I got this from Eben Pagan, and he said you want to, this is kind of specific to our industry, but I'm sure it'll help everyone. You've got to get to 20 products as soon as possible. Your productize should really be one of the first steps after mindset. And I made that mistake. You know, I was spent 2.5 years trying to create the perfect product, this amazing mind-blowing product. And when you have that kind of armory and that toolbox of all these products at different prices, it opens up so many doors, you know, upsells, side sells. And so it's kind of linking back to get it out there and get rid of perfectionism. But my advice would be, if you're not sure what the first step is, productize.
I would also, if I went back and told myself, yes, you can do this and just get out, get down and with it. The other thing that I realized a little bit late on in my internet marketing cycle was leverage through recurring income. Okay. I was focusing on one-time sales. And as soon as I switched across, even as an affiliate, to recurring income products, I started to benefit from that sell once, keep making money scenario. Mm. And as soon as I put a recurring income product of my own, that was like the mothership for all of my other products. Even the low-end products, the high-end products, all lead back to the same central hub.
Yep.
Within a very short period, you can build an enormous business up using that central thing, because now you have qualified buyers and you have that ability to have a residual income that's working for you while you're not working, which is just absolutely critical. Probably leads nicely into the next scenario here.
Speaking of leverage, drum roll.
The ultimate leverage.
It's amazing. We're just doing these mind reads.
It's like unbelievable. We're one step ahead of ourselves, which not too hard. James, could you kind of give a nutshell description of leverage?
Well, leverage is getting it's like the Archimedes effect. It's where you get a maximum result from a minimum input. Okay, so you can, the fulcrum is a good example of that. You can move heavy objects if you use a long lever. Online, we have this fortunate situation where many, many things can be systemized, automated, and of course outsourced. So you can literally set up systems. I love systems. That's one of my favorite things to do, is to create systems that, like a marble run, you know, where you put the thing in one end and it goes down and along and you can do that online probably more so than in just about any other business, because you can reach so many people instantly, and you can get such good data and feedback that you can refine your system with. So there's plenty of leverage strategies. And as a solo business, or my wife and I, we don't have any staff, we just have contractors, but we have lots and lots of web properties and businesses out there that are ticking along on autopilot. So that's one aspect of leverage that you just have to love. A website could be viewed as a salesperson that is selling 24 hours, 7 days a week, that never asks for a pay rise, that you can set up once and leave going. What do you guys want to talk about with leverage?
Well, with leverage, I see a lot of internet marketers, when I'm teaching them, I show them how to turn their actual list into their leverage point, because your list is your hidden asset, and there's so many different points of business that you can leverage with your list. I.e., you can get web designers from your list, you can get article writers from your list, you can get video creators for your list. So it's about tapping into your list, because once you're building a list, it's not just about profiting from your list, it's about leveraging that list as well. Because what's going to happen is you can form your own little task force, your own little private contractors from your actual list itself. So there's two different ways to leverage out a list, and that's what part of the time capsule. That's what also I would say to myself back then too, is once I'm building my list, I would tap into my list to figure out who's on my list, why they're on my list, what skill sets they have, and how can I leverage those skill sets. So that's another form of leverage as well.
Yeah, I mean, you can leverage, I would say practice it over and over again. This is what I've done. I've kind of seen people like James doing it really well, and now I'm kind of honing it like a muscle. So what I try and do now is every time, leverage masturbation, I call it. Leveraging myself. What I do is every time I'm doing a task or using my own time or my own effort or my own money, I try and think, how can I get the maximum out of this? And a great example, I know you do this, James, is we would create something like this, which might initially be a video, and then you can have that outsourced or have it created into an audio. You can have it transcribed into a transcription or a PDF, and it's the same amount of work. It's not like we have to redo the audio and then redo and start typing it. It's the same amount of work and you're outsourcing it. And it's just maximizing the output from a single task. And I really love that. There's a lot of software and scripts. I think we're extremely fortunate right now to have software that maybe 9-10 years ago would have cost thousands of dollars. And it's just completely free for the most part now. Things like Aweber, well, it's not free, but not the best example. But are there any tools and scripts, softwares that you use, James, that you think are key for this?
Probably one of the things I've recently been really, really excited about is Basecamp, because I've put my entire business on there. And from there, I can run all of my outsources. I can run mentees. And also, I can have partners. So I choose different partners for different businesses, where we can set up service businesses, we can set up memberships together and manage it remotely. It doesn't matter where they are in the world. I can still access that entire dashboard from my iPhone using an application. So Basecamp is, for me, an amazing leverage tool.
Yeah, I mean, even probably the simplest way of getting across the power of leverage is tools like Aweber, just sending out an email broadcast. You know, if you compare that, if you have 1,000 people on an email list, you can go through one by one and write them all an email, or you can do it once, click the button and send it out to 1,000 people. And I think that's probably the strongest and simplest definition of leverage in action in our industry, Pete.
Absolutely, yeah. Myself personally, I do use Aweber, I use GetResponse as well, and I use Infusionsoft, because all three have different points of leverage. Also, some great tools to use is Google Ad Planner and Google Documents. It's beautiful. I can't believe some of the tools Google gives you for free and are so powerful, and people still don't know how to leverage them. Coming into probably a few products that we're going to be creating, we're going to go into how to actually leverage Google's free tools and show you how to make money with them. So that's pretty phenomenal as well.
Yeah, I mean, even this morning I actually had a little leverage light bulb moment. Mm-hmm. There's a domain name, leverage light bulb moment. Basically I do kind of like a weekly calls as part of a continuity program. And a simple leverage trick was to just give those calls a name, and then it instantly productizes it. So, you know, I'm doing the calls anyways. I'm still preparing for the calls. I'm doing the call. I'm giving the information. But if you just give it a name, package it, then at no extra time or expense, you've got products every single week. So, I mean, that's a great example of leverage.
Yeah, it also works for webinars. So in my monthly community, if we do a really smashing, awesome webinar, we'll give it a name and productize it. So we did like the Ninja Affiliate. We did the server crushing traffic. We did Fast Cash. So they all ended up being their own little individual product. And you can then use those in different ways using the leverage concept, repurpose them. You can dangle them over the side of a membership as a thanks for being on the waiting list type thing, or you can sell them as a small product with an upsell into, hey, if you like this, you can get all these other things as well for just $1, et cetera.
And even, you know, leveraging your time through outsourcing, like we talked about earlier, that's technically leverage as well. I know James and Pete and I were down the beach the other day, and we came back and James had this report in his Gmail of all a list of all the things that had been achieved while we were down the beach. So, I mean, that's a great way of leveraging his time. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, it really is quite amazing, but you can have, I can log into Basecamp, I can set some action items for an outsource team, and then, as you said, we come back home, and then there's like 3 transcribed reports, there's 2 websites built and customized to the specification. Now, in the old days, I would have done all of this myself, and I'm just one person, and I can't possibly match the efforts of several outsourcers. And with geo arbitrage, which is a fancy name for that, in other parts of the world, they're happy to do the same sort of work for a lower rate, because in their currency, what we pay is worth an absolute fortune. You'd be mad not to investigate doing this as soon as you're ready to grow. And I'm suggesting that the first thing you should probably do is hire an outsourcer to start growing, because it's sort of like a chicken and an egg scenario. Once you hire an outsourcer, you'll have to come up with things for them to do, and they can just speed up your efforts. They can go and research, they can write content, they can distribute content, they can create websites, they can phone people. There's so many things they can do that pretty much anything that you don't have to physically do, you can do as an outsourcer. You're probably thinking, where do you get these outsourcers from?
I was just about to ask. we didn't even have a slide prepared for this one.
I was reading your notes.
Oh, you were? Darn it.
So what I've found lately, this is one of the most exciting things. I'll let Peter talk about where you get them, but I'm going to talk about once you get them. This is a leverage strategy that I've come up with.
Perfect.
Is once you get one outsourcer, quite often you can get help from them to find the next one. And I believe it's a good idea to give them a little bonus for finding the right person. And once you get the second one on, you can pretty much assign them both a task to speak to each other and transfer what the first one's learnt to the second one. So now you've outsourced the recruitment, you've outsourced the induction training, and literally the first day that I had my second virtual assistant on board, they were the second one was already building websites and creating reports in half the time it took the first one to learn, because they just fast-tracked the learning for you. So they can actually be a self-growing business there if you set the structure up right. So again, it's another system.
Definitely.
Where would you recommend that people go to get their first outsourcer?
Well, the quickest way, and for free, what I would suggest people do is, if you already have a list, I would tap into your own list. What I would do is create a short little quick email, send them to a survey, ask them 3 to 5 questions, short, simple questions. That's how you're going to find your greatest outsourcers right off the bat. Now, again, you can go into forums. You can go into forums where, if you're looking for a web design, you can go into web design forums. Chances are, 9 times out of 10, web designers, they just love to design websites. They're not actually into it for making money. They do it for a hobby. So you can go into these forums and find the best website designers for free. Usually some of them are actually kids too. And you can form a nice little agreement with them, get them for free. They'll create some great websites for you, and you move on. So if you're looking for copywriters, the same thing with copywriters, because you can actually leverage free copywriters that don't have a name yet, because they want to get their name out there and they want to get their exposure out there. You can go into those forums and actually create a deal with them as well. Give them a percentage on the back end of your product. So there's lots of different ways to find outsourcers for free. And then from there, you can go into Craigslist. There's other websites such as Best Job Philippines. You can go to Odesk.com to get some really good outsourcers. But those outsourcers there, this is once you're getting a really good established business online. That's when you want to go to get the higher end type of outsourcers, because they already have the experience, they have the knowledge, they know exactly what you're looking for. So you can form partnerships with them as well and just literally explode and leverage your business out.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that was a really cool tip about tapping into your own list and your own followers and your own database. I've done that. I've actually found business partners in the past from doing that. You've just got to put it out there. And I know, James, you've had some success with that. My mind is wandering. on that note.
You haven't met some of my partners. No sex.
As soon as I hear the word partner, that's where my mind goes, I'm afraid.
My greatest business partners have been, they've come through my training and my system. And that's because they understand what I do. I've been able to observe their results as a student. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you a tip too, if you are looking at partnerships, because I've had a lot of experience with that. Sometimes you want to get someone with the opposite skills to you, so that you can, you know, both contribute what you're strong at. But occasionally there might be a need to partner with someone with the same skills. And people look at me funny when I say that. But I pretty much did that with my coaching forum, because by choosing someone with the same skills, basically it now means you only have to contribute to it 50% of the time. Whereas if you partner with someone with the opposite skills, you're always in for your bit and they're always in for their bit. So if you choose someone on the other side of the world and you have very similar skills, you can both be consistent with your responses. You can have, you know, a week away without any impact, because they can fill in for you, and vice versa. So you want to choose carefully.
I've actually done both those things. I've got a business partner that complements my weaknesses, so he's a complete opposite of me. He's very technical, fills in those gaps. And then I've also got one that's pretty much a clone of me, which is a scary thought. And you would think that kind of goes against what most people teach, because they say find the opposite. But it actually works really well. Like you say, you only have to do 50% of the work. And we find that we kind of inspire each other. We just bounce off each other, which helps as well. So, which brings me back to partners. On that note, our final slide here, implementation. Perhaps with leverage, perhaps the most important word that I could think of. So, Pete, do you want to start on this bad boy?
Yeah, definitely. As far as implementation goes, the first thing that I would literally tell people to do is to map everything out in a process map so that they understand from A to Z what they need to get done. So where's the big hurt in their business? Find out how they're going to solve that big hurt in their business and then actually go out and do the steps to plug those holes. Because without a clear-cut blueprint or a process map, you're just going to be totally lost because you're going to be trying to find an outsourcer over here. Then all of a sudden, oh my God, I got to take my dog to the doctor's office. You're just going to get so confused. So map everything out, first of all, and then that's how you're going to take massive action when you implement everything. So that's what I would tell people what to do first.
Yeah, I'm probably going to be brutally honest here and do a little confession. This is definitely an area that I've struggled with in the past, is productivity and procrastination. I've got what I like to refer to as shiny object syndrome. So yeah, I'm constantly jumping from one thing to the other in my professional and personal life. I'm only joking. If my mum's listening, that's a joke. you have to be... let's talk about productivity, actually, because I think that's a big key on implementation. What I found is that, as a kind of a warning, if you're working from home, and I know a lot of people are doing that now, that's great because you're working from home, but by the same token, you're always at work. And so I think you have to be as ruthless and as focused with your personal time as you do with your professional. So if I'm going to watch the TV or play Xbox or something like that, I will actually structure that. So I'll say, okay, I'm going to play Xbox for 30 minutes. Because once you start, you know, you're never going to go back and do some paperwork or something like that. So that's definitely helped for me. Working in small chunks, I think is it the Eben Pagan rule of 45 minutes work, 15 minute break? That's certainly helped for me. James, I'm sure you've got some implementation strategies.
Yeah, well, strategy is the key word there, Dean. This is what I observe. A lot of people are playing tactical games. They learn a tactic and they're trying to do little bits of tactics at a time. It's not how you run a business. You need to know what the overall strategy is, as Peter mentioned. So whilst I'll know what the overall strategy is because I have it very clearly in my mind exactly what I'm supposed to be doing, when it comes time to implement, you might need to put a few different tactics together. So one thing that I'll do is I'll actually pull out a whiteboard and I'll write down the exact thing that I need to be doing in the next focus chunk of time. So sort of set little mini goals or mini objectives. So if I have I'll basically state to myself, today I need to complete X. So I did this yesterday. I had a project that needed a certain stage to be completed by a deadline. A big tip there, set deadlines, especially if you're an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
So if you have a deadline, you'll get more stuff done. So I had something that had a deadline. So my loose plan was to complete that by a certain time, which meant that I put some focused energy into that. And even though it's exciting to do other things, sometimes you just have to buckle down and avoid distractions. And there's nothing more satisfying than completing that deadline, sending it off to whatever you had to do, or you know, uploading it or whatever, and then rubbing it off the whiteboard. That's very satisfying, and then you can move on to the next thing.
Definitely, they're all like little wins, and so if you can accomplish 10 to 15 little wins throughout the course of the day, and then you keep continuing to do that every day, by the end of the month you're going to be so streamlined with your strategy that literally within 60 to 90 days your business is going to be taken to the next level. How I teach my students is I don't teach them to think about 3 years down the road or 5 years down the road. I teach them to think 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, because when you're building on an internet business, the internet changes at the speed of light. So you got to be able to be proactive when you're seeing changes going on with the internet. So it's all short-term goals, but the short-term goals are going to give you the biggest bang for your buck.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad James mentioned deadlines there as well. I think that's really key. One of the things I would recommend with deadlines is make it as tight as possible. It's really, really extremely important. I think there's some law, and I can't remember the exact person or name behind this.
Parkinson's
is it? Parkinson's law? It's that a task will expand based on the time that you allocate to it. So, yeah, just be pretty ruthless in your deadlines as well. That's something I've noticed. You know, if I give myself 3 weeks for something that's going to take 3 days, it will take me 4 weeks, and vice versa. So that's extremely important. Another thing is just get started. I'm a big believer in momentum when it comes to implementation. You know, you can sit around and wait for all the things to align in the universe, or you can just get going and get some momentum. And I find the first 5 minutes are the hardest 5 minutes.
Well, one of my mentors taught me a couple of sayings. One was, you can't steer a parked car. Right. Nice. And then the sort of second take on that sort of similar philosophy, and it's really weird because I bumped into this mentor yesterday.
Trying to steer a parked car in the car park.
Once he challenged me, and I was in a role where I was very comfortable, and he found me a job that paid twice as much, which was a lot because I was already on $150,000 a year. And it was quite a big task to take on. But he said, you know what? Once you get up and running with this, it's like you can steer a Formula One car down the straights with your little pinky. Yeah. You know, once you have that speed, it's very, very easy to make small adjustments and to keep flying along. Okay, so the point is, yeah, just get up and running, get it in motion. You can make changes on the fly.
Yeah. I think two of the biggest things that you need to understand too, for those listening on the call, is if you're thinking about doing something halfway around the world, somebody else is probably thinking about your same idea, your same strategy, your same technique. So you got to get it off the ground and you got to do it, because it's about being an innovator and imitator and then being an idiot. So you don't want to be in the last group. So, and as well, you got to think, one of my mentors always taught me, money loves speed. So if you're going to be an implementer, you've got to be a ruthless implementer, because when you do the execution, you have massive action. Money loves speed. Money's going to come to you. So money doesn't sit around. You can't chase it. Let it just go out, implement stuff, and then when you do that, the money will fall, because the money's the byproduct of everything that we're doing online between myself, James, and Dean. Is money's just a byproduct. It's not always about the money. It's about, why are you getting online? What do you want to accomplish? Do you want to build a business online? Okay. Build a business, but build a lifestyle. And in everything, the money's just a byproduct, because money's going to be able to take care of you down the road. So that's the biggest thing about implementation that I can say.
Yeah, and I can tell you how not to implement. If you want to get nothing done, absolutely nothing at all, just start multitasking. That is the biggest killer for productivity in the world. You know, single tasking is the most powerful thing you can do. And this is off the top of my head. You know, I've just created this now, but I kind of feel my head is like a computer, and you have all these processes going. And if you multitask, it's kind of using up all the memory. So I get whiteboards and I focus on one particular task at a time. Once that's completed, only then do I move on to the next one. And you know, so many people are checking emails and they're on Twitter and they've got this going and they're creating this idea and writing this blog post, and it's just not the way to do it. I doubt you have any thoughts on this, James, but if you, seeing I've just stole your story.
That seems to have just vacuumed out of my head and into your So that's a good implementation, Dean, of a concept.
There we go. I'm leveraging James's brain there.
I want to focus here on, you know, what can you do right now? Because it's good to talk about this and, okay, you get it. And you understand what it is and why you should be doing it, even how to do it. Let's talk about that. The first thing is clear inbox. Because as Peter said, money's the byproduct. I think it's the byproduct of value creation. So to the extent that you're creating value for people and solving problems is the extent that money will flow. You can't solve problems and create value if you're just reading emails. Okay, that's just, it's not putting anything of use out into the environment. So once you clear the inbox, then you'll actually say, wow, I wonder what I should be doing now. I've got nothing else to do. There's no emails to read. So now I probably should create something. And that's when you start getting into product creation and blog content and list building. It allows you to build up an audience to communicate with, and a platform to provide value. And that also, everything else becomes so much easier. You're in a situation then where you can ask people what they want, or they'll happily tell you via their comments, and you can investigate more as to what other problems could be solved, and it'll lead you into, you know, creating the 20 products that Dean suggested. And once you're in motion, you won't be able to turn it off.
Exactly. And here's a big tip for those of you that are listening. If you want to really attack your email, what I teach my students to do is I teach them to look at the best subject lines in the emails and then create content out of the best subject lines. And you'll never be stuck for content ever again, because that's going to take you to create short little blog posts. And those short little blog posts that you actually create based on those subject lines, you'll get some really good immediate traffic coming in if you target those actual keyword terms. And I'm going to be talking about this at Fast Web Formula. It's a really wicked technique that I'm going to be talking about. A lot of people don't, no one does this, and I'm going to talk about it, and you guys are going to see how it works. So we're going to actually design a blog, and we'll actually do it.
Awesome. Well, it sort of reminds me of this thing regarding what you said, you know, look at subject lines. Too many people just staring at a blank page, and that'll immediately cause... Dean's just walking off in disgust here.
Outrageous.
Outrageous.
Go on, continue. Let's see if you can remember it.
No, it's in one of Dean's products. But I feel the same thing. When I'm looking for inspiration, I remember that it's already out there. Go into a busy forum and have a look at the threads that are on fire, the subjects that are being discussed the most. That will help you understand what is polarizing the market. And they've probably been reading one of Dean's products about doing the opposite or doing the controversial type thing.
Well, you can either, on that note, you can either tell people what they want to know or need to know, or you can let them tell you.
Yeah.
So that's what I do with things like forums and Pete saying on email subject lines, just let them know what they want to hear. Especially forums are great for this, and then just create that content and you're not trying to mind read them.
Well, I noticed a lot of your social media involves asking questions. You know, I'm thinking about this, what would you do? Or have you got any ideas? Or you let people contribute to the conversation.
Yeah, well, I mean, people love
giving
opinions. Yeah. People like to get into debates and opinions. And you know, no one's ever hung up the phone while they were talking. So, you know, they're always interested in what they have to say themselves. So I just fuel that fire, basically.
Yeah. The fire starter.
I'm the fire starter. So, a little tool Pete mentioned about surveys, which is something I've been doing over the last couple of years. Extremely powerful. Free little tool that people can check out is surveymonkey.com. Is that what you use, Pete?
Yeah, I use SurveyMonkey and I use PollDaddy as well. They both have good different features on them.
Yeah, I'll also throw in a little leverage tip there with SurveyMonkey. If you take the paid option and you jump onto my advice of getting the leverage where possible, that will allow you to control the link that it goes to at the end of the survey.
Yep.
And you can send it to a nice little monetized video upsell or back in. If you're taking them from your community, it's sort of a courtesy to pop them back into the community upon completion of the survey. Or if you want an ultra advanced strategy, land them on a thank you page with a free gift. And this is where the money idea is. You give them a choice of three gifts. It could be the same product with three different product names, and whichever one they select the most, they've just told you what to call that product. So it's a very sneaky tip.
Ninja.
Very ninja tip. So you could have three different products, and whichever one gets downloaded the most, you know that's what your market wants, and you can then go and productize that. And you can iframe a SurveyMonkey link underneath your own website with a simple iframe script.
Yeah, and from my experience with surveys, don't bombard them with 600 questions. I use kind of 3 to 5 at the absolute most. And I've actually seen marketers be very successful with one question and then straight onto a custom thank you page.
It's always good to ask them what they hate, you know, and get that strong emotion. What do you wish that we have that we don't? Like, what frustrates you the most about our system? Or what one thing do you just, you know, do you just wish that we could do for you that we haven't done yet? You know, or if this was your forum, you know, what would you change about it straight away? You know, it can really get to the point of the frustrations, and then that will help you with your stick rate if you can remove obstacles.
Do you want to explain stick rate?
Stick rate, or different to your stick rate. I learned something from a fabulous entrepreneur called Dean Jackson, and he has a very, very good community where he charges quite a high price point. I think it's about $400 a month, and he has thousands of members. I think it's 4,000 members at $400 a month.
Wow.
Don't quote me on that, but it's just my understanding of what he might have had. And his whole purpose is to make sure that people do not leave that recurring program for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And so a lot of his energy is directed at giving someone a reason why they should stay and removing any reason why they should leave. So he does cliffhanger products that span over different months. he pre-announces what's coming next month, just like a good news station will do between ad commercials. So stick rate is simply how many people stay on the program. And another great pioneer of this stuff is Joe Polish. And he teaches to have the telecall that people can call up when they get a new product and remind them that they made a good purchase, let them know that you care about them and that how they can get help if they need support and how they can consume the product. So encouraging product consumption is one of the greatest ways to encourage stick. So that's helping people implement on your own product will actually build up their desire to have more of your product.
Absolutely. And you also want to make sure you take care of your customers by giving them surprise little bonuses and benefits that they would have never seen coming. This will also help you include and just raise your stick rate as well. So give them like little special little PDFs, drop ship something to their door. Customers, everyone loves a surprise. Mm. So if you can include that with your stick rate products, you're laughing.
And a great resource to kind of get some ideas and see how the best in the world do this is any soap opera, like using the cliffhanger technique. That's really, really powerful with any continuity. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah, the soap opera formula. I mean, they're geniuses at it. So it's, end on a cliffhanger, announce what's coming up next month, things like that. And, that's extremely, extremely powerful. James, I have a question. If people would like to know more about us three rebels, where could they go?
Well, in my case, they could pop along to Superfast Business, and it would list a bunch of websites that I've got in motion, and it also includes one that we're putting out there shortly called imfusion.com, where you'll see a delicate blend of left brain, right brain, the creative, mad, genius scientist. Myself and then
redirect.
No, that was a comedic redirect there. I'm learning this stuff from Dean. And then there's the boring, standard, technical, but competent side of things. So we're splicing together some interesting bits and pieces on that website. What about you, Peter?
I'll be coming out with a website shortly because I'm super underground right now. So you guys and girls will have to wait for that one. And you'll have to bug James and Dean for it to get their website address.
Yeah, just join up James and Dean's list and we'll let you know where Peter's hanging out.
Now we're talking. Yeah, you have to, I know the secret with Pete, you have to bribe him with banana bread. And then he's putty in your hands after that. So that's an insider secret for you. For me, you can go to GermanPornFetish.com. Now, if you go to deanhunt.com, you can see my shenanigans and online attention seeking there. And I echo James's comment on imfusion.com. It's kind of like an explosion of both sides of the brain meeting in the middle and causing some craziness. So it's something that James and I are really excited about. So go and check that out.
There you go.
Done. It's that easy.
Well.